Blog Talk Radio.
The following program is brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE.
Hi, I'm Patrick Corden.
Hi, I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life.
Welcome to A Shamanic Life with your host, John Carosella. Today's featured guest is Patrick Corrigan, a shamanic cartoonist. Yes, you heard that right. John and Patrick talk about cartoons, the power of the worm, and the exploration of your personal mythology. With creativity coach and shamanic artist Annette Wagner, John explores our beloveds in part 5 of The Vision Plan. We'll also hear from Mildred Lynn McDonald, Firefly Willows LIVE co-founder and host of Healing Conversations, on her work with the Pachamama Alliance in Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream. In Spirit, Muse, and Song, John talks with local composer and performer Jeff Oster, one of the very few exploring the terrain of ambient trumpet and flugelhorn. His music has been described as Miles Davis meets Enigma. John chats with Jeff, and we'll hear some of his hauntingly powerful music. Also on today's program, John will speak with Karen Armstrong, founder of the Shamanic Life online community, and Gina Carosella will share The Sensory Experience, a deep dive into the world of the senses. We're not just doing shamanism, we're living it. Come along with us. It's A Shamanic Life.
Welcome, everyone, to A Shamanic Life. It is, I know it's a Tuesday. It's Tuesday, May something. And with me, to help me out with this problem, is the one and only founder of Shamanic Life online community, Karen Armstrong. Karen, welcome to the show.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. I can't stop laughing.
Okay.
Oh, it's today, May 7th.
Okay.
Technology, it's too many speakers going on at once, and just anyway.
Well, so get yourself just a little closer to that mic, Karen, so that our audience can hear you nice and clear.
Okay, so maybe I should turn the volume up?
That's good. Yeah, sure. That's
better. Okay. Is that better?
And I have to tell you, team, putting this show together this time was quite an adventure. But I think it's a good show. I think it's a good show. So hang in there with me. I think we've got some really fun stuff to share. And in particular, a real find that, Karen, you found our featured guest tonight, Patrick Corrigan.
Yes, yes. I adore Patrick. He's my fairy godson. I met him a couple of years ago at Sober people training.
Where are you going? You're
so
back. Where are you going?
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot the pink duct tape.
Jeepers.
Hello.
Okay, everybody settle down.
I'm sorry. I forgot to put the pink duct tape in the square so that I know not
all
to
right.
move around.
Right, back to the show.
Okay.
So Patrick is... So how did you meet Patrick?
I met Patrick at a soul retrieval training in Alton Collins in Oregon. And I am a very good observer, and I flit around everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. And I would see him sitting at the table doing medicine card readings for everybody, mm-hmm. anybody that wanted them. And I never asked him for one because I didn't want to bother him. But he just made such an impression on me because. Are you there?
Yeah, it's a little Skype issue. No, let's not let that stop.
Okay. Anyway, so he's a cartoonist, yeah. And he is a graphic novelist, and he is passionate about his shamanic work.
Mm. And we have. Jeff Oster on the show for Spirit, Muse, and Song.
Oh, gosh, I know. I just listened to his music today, and I went into this heightened state of altered consciousness. I'm like, he's the best drug I've ever had.
It's pretty cool. I was actually really amazed to hear, and we're going to talk with him later in the show, to hear this ambient, almost shamanic trumpet. I mean, mm-hmm. Think about that. That's such an interesting, I mean, we usually think of the trumpet as being so bright and brassy and bold, and this is just like, so that's really cool. and we got some other fun stuff going on in the show tonight.
Yeah.
So enough about us. What about you? What about Shamanic Life online community? What's going on there?
Well, I am, right now, I have given up learning how to do Dreamweaver. That's not my gift. So I am looking to hire somebody to do our website instead of get us off of Facebook. Because I get too distracted on Facebook. it is about me, right? So if I'm getting too distracted on Facebook, I'm sure everybody else is. Because we're all such, ADD people that are trying to do what we can to help, raise the consciousness of humanity. I don't think any of us are dull and boring.
Well, and I think that's one of the reasons why Facebook can be so distracting, is because, when I go on Facebook, I see all kinds of causes that call me. They pull at my heartstrings and they ask me to get involved, And so we're going to have a guest on the show tonight, Mildred Lynn McDonald, who is going to talk about her activism in the Pachamama Alliance, which is kind of a shamanic thing.
Well, it is. And, she's focusing it somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to figure out where my focus is, on what cause would be most beneficial without depleting myself.
Well, I think that's really important, the idea of sustainability starts within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have internal sustainability in order to participate in and contribute to external sustainability. And I mean, I know that as well. It's like all these things I want to do, but if I can't feed myself, if I can't feed my energy level, then I don't really get to do them for very long because I have to stop.
Exactly.
So that's important.
Well, and Stephen Getsky, he forwarded or he posted how we have changed so much with regards to our ability to go out and work on the land. We're in offices, and so we need to take 90-minute breaks. We need to take 20-minute breaks every 90 minutes in order to be productive.
Yeah, that actually feels right to me. I struggled during my high-tech career. Excuse me. I realized that I was extraordinarily productive. If I worked a 6-hour day, I could get mm-hmm. so much done, and I felt so empowered and so powerful and so effective in mm-hmm. 6 hours. But anytime I worked longer than 6 hours, the whole day, the whole vibe of the day became less and less productive.
Well, yes, lethargic and fatigue set in. All these diagnoses for all these things that we have by the medical doctors, is not really anything wrong with us. We're just not properly taking care of ourselves.
Yeah.
Not just from a live food and, water, but taking breaks.
Yeah, energetically. It's really kind of simple. So many, and we say this, we hear this all the time, so many of our health problems are stress-related. But nobody actually realizes what that means. It means that they're all preventable simply by changing our attitude about what we do and doing differently. Medicate ourselves. We have to stop doing things that are stupid. You know what I mean?
I know. This is my new mantra. Change the energy. How do I change the energy? Mm-hmm. Get up and move. Change the energy.
Yeah.
Because I find myself not breathing, hyperventilating. Anyway, it's
wild.
A crazy mess that we get to try to solve.
Well, okay. So let's get somebody who has some ways of solving this problem is our first guest. Pat, he's because he's a shamanic cartoonist. He's a pretty whimsical fellow. So why don't we kick into the show?
All right. Welcome, Patrick, right. And thank you so much, John.
Thanks, Karen. Thanks for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Would you like to share your shamanic life with our audience? We're always looking for featured guests who aren't just doing shamanism, but living it. If you've got stories to tell, let us know. Your stories can illuminate the path for others. If you're interested, contact us at facebook.com/shamanic life or send a message to Karen Armstrong, K-A-R-Y-N, at shamaniclife.com or John Carosella, JC@fireflywillows.com. We're ready to listen.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And with me today is Patrick Corrigan. Patrick is a cartoonist who suddenly discovered he was, and had actually always been, on a shamanic path. He is constantly expanding his shamanic and intuitive skills as he walks a gentle road strewn with humor and whimsy, combining his passions for cartooning and shamanism, by which he hopes to empower others. Patrick is an ordained minister of the SHES, the International Assembly of Spiritual Healers and Earth Stewards, a Reiki master, and has studied and practiced shamanism alone and with many teachers over the course of many years. He has a shamanic practice called Perching Wolf Studios in Seattle, Washington, where when he's not doing readings, healing, or teaching, he's most likely napping with his cats while watching Robin Hood movies. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
And napping with cats, I can understand, but watching Robin Hood movies?
Okay, I'm a Robin Hood geek. I can't help it. I think I've got some past life ties to that era or whatever. But
how does one be? Is this like the Errol Flynn Robin Hood or is any and all?
Errol Flynn is my favorite by far. He's like one of my heroes, but I pretty much love the whole gamut of Robin Hood, whatever. From the Disney animated to the latest one with Russell Crowe.
So, what is it about Robin Hood that that tugs at your heart?
There's a resonance there. I love archery. I belong to the Society for Creative Anachronism, which is a medieval recreation group.
Right,
and
right.
So I love that era, and I've been told I have past life ties to Robin Hood, but I won't go any further into that. It's just one of those things that just lights me up, and I could talk about Robin Hood for hours.
Well, there's when I started studying shamanism, I started with the core cross-cultural shamanism, and there were certain aspects of it through the Foundation for Shamanic Studies that resonated very well with me, and certain aspects of it that didn't resonate so well.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finished the 3-year program, which was a transformational, just amazing experience for me, I went into a 2-year program with Tom Cowan studying Celtic shamanism.
Uh-huh.
And all of the things that were struggles for me in the 3-year program of cross-cultural shamanism turned out that everything that was happening to me that wasn't cross-cultural was what the Celts did.
Awesome.
So I have this really tight affinity, even though my heritage is Italian, I have this really tight affinity for the Celtic way.
Uh-huh.
And the stories of Finn McCool, is, like a different version of Robin Hood.
Uh-huh.
They enchant me as well. It's fascinating stuff to be,
have
a merry band of men in the woods being ninjas.
Medieval ninjas.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. It's really cool. So, okay, so that's Robin Hood. You're a unique character here. You're a shamanic cartoonist.
Yeah.
Why cartoons? What is it about the cartoons? How do they help you channel your spiritual walk, or what is it that they do for you?
You know, it's like I can't remember a time I didn't want to be a cartoonist. I mean, this is like deep, deep childhood stuff, and Charles Schulz was always my hero, and I always wanted to work for Disney. So it was just this magic. I think this just came to me, but maybe it's the enchantment of the comics and cartoons, and it's like one step closer to the fairy realm, maybe, kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, I guess that could be, yeah.
you know, it's kind of that whimsy and the humor. And then there's also, you can do anything with cartoons. So as far as like my spiritual life, you know, I can do things and portray things in my comics that I can't really give voice to, especially now without, you know, doing shamanic journeys and stuff. I can actually put my journeys into comic form and get more of a feeling of actually being there. It kind of, when I look at my comics, I just have to look through the pages and I'll see the pictures, and it just like instantly takes me back to that time and the emotion more than just words can do. So
yeah, I think, you know, that's a real asset to be able to quickly draw your journeys in a way that is evocative.
Yeah.
Do you find that that's really helpful?
I do. And there's, you know, it's just like, you know, when you're doing like affirmations and stuff like that, you know, there's a little bit more power to writing them down rather than just saying them. And I find that when I draw things, it's kind of that much closer to manifesting what it is that I want, or to really embodying it, bringing it into more, just not out there in the ether someplace. It's actually brings it back into my heart.
Okay, so you, I've taken a look at some of your cartoons. They're quite charming.
Uh-huh.
How much of your spirit self is on display in your cartoons?
Quite a bit, actually. I think that's part of what the draw is, because, not pun intended, but I can express more of myself. There's more of myself on the page sometimes than what you'll see just walking down the street or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, do you have an alter ego that's on the page that's other than the character that you draw as yourself?
That's a good question.
Like, do you have a dog that does a stand-in for you in embarrassing situations or anything like that?
No, I have a couple of different forms of comedy. I do the one that's kind of my journal, and
yeah,
that one is just me. But sometimes I'll turn into, like, you know, with the magic of comics, I'll turn into a Charlie Brown character, or I might sometimes, you know, I'll appear as a unicorn, or I'll be Perching Wolf is like this wolf with wings, and so sometimes in my comics I'll appear as a winged wolf.
Oh.
So there's these different, so there's that whole shapeshifter thing of shamanism going
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I've got these other characters that I've drawn since I was a kid. One's a worm and one is a dog. And then there's another one that's a kind of a gerbil that's kind of joined those two in the meantime in the later years. And I find that they really, like, the dog is really my inner self. It's really, like I tell people, I don't have an inner child, I have an inner puppy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what the dog is, just embodies that puppiness of just, oh, look, this is going to be so much fun. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And then the gerbil is always the curmudgeon, and he's not happy if I draw too much because then he gets tired. If I don't draw him enough, he gets upset because he's not being paid attention enough. And then the worm is in the middle, kind of making sense of it all. He kind of comes out with the whole picture of what's really going on, and
mm-hmm.
I kind of tie him into that kind of mythology of the dragons and that kind of earth wisdom and stuff.
Oh, that's cool. I was going to ask you why the worm, and you know, because I was thinking, you know, the very earthy, and very what's the word I'm looking for? Sanguine, you know, just like, okay, you know, things are the way they are and we can all just get along here. But you tie him into dragon motif.
Yeah. Well, I've got a backlog of unpublished comics that I haven't published yet, and one of them, they're on this grand quest for Minnesota, of all things. But
for Minnesota?
That's where I'm from originally.
Okay.
And so it's the hidden part of Minnesota. It's like it's where the gods live. And this is now getting off topic, but anyway, so Wormy is a great worm. He's a worm and he's great. So he's a great worm. So he's connected to the dragons. And in the comic, it's like the dragons, the whole society of dragons, it's called the Grand Clue, which comes from Theseus and the Minotaur, where the clue is the thread that he used to make his way through the labyrinth. And so, and I think of that, you know, mythologically as all these dragons, these long serpents, you know, are this grand clue to what truth really is. And so Wormy's tied into that as a, he's a great worm, but he hasn't been accepted into the grand clue yet. But
it's
kind of fun. It's like pulling all this mythology into it. And yeah,
I really like that. I somebody did a power animal retrieval for me once.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a worm.
Really?
Yeah, and I didn't know what to make of it, other than that kind of earthy, you know, earthy and simple is how I saw
right.
it.
Right. Uh-huh.
But as you talk about it, I am really kind of motivated to think about the connection with dragon magic.
Yeah.
With dragon spirit, it's very cool.
Cool.
And how did that come to you?
You know, it was just one of those things. I just, when I was doing this comic, I was just doing it like page. I wouldn't plan it out ahead of time so much. I would just start doing a page and, you know, what would come to me for what this page needed to be. And I just, one day I'm drawing this page like, oh, there's this whole society of dragons and it's called the Grand Clue. It just kind of, I don't know where this stuff comes from. It just kind of pops into my head and,
Well, you know, a lot of it probably comes from the other side of the veil.
Definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
So that leads me to this other question, which is related. Mm-hmm. Where does your shamanic practice take you? You know, as you do we've been talking about your cartooning and how it's influenced by spirit. Now I want to talk about your shamanic work and what landscape you see when you do your shamanic work, and and that's metaphorically speaking. I mean, when you do shamanic work, what is that like for you?
Well, I get the sense that my shamanic landscape is a little more whimsical than others.
Yes, that's kind of what I'm probing for. Is that the case?
It is, and you know, My spirit animals are just a bunch of goofballs, and you know, I'll be in a shamanic journey circle or something, and people will be talking about these deep, profound journeys they had, and I'll come back. Well, I just met one of Santa's reindeer, you know, and but it's at the same time, it's like it's easy to pass that whimsical stuff off as just kind of surface frosting kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I find that to me, it's the language of my soul. It's like being a cartoonist, being an artist. Being someone who's just loves the whimsy and the magic and the enchantment of the world, that's the stuff that speaks to me. And so, of course, I'm going to have spirit animals that come to me that are a little more whimsical, not as serious. You know, my favorite bumper sticker that I ever saw was, life is too important to be taken seriously.
Right.
And that's kind of the way I see it. And so my spirit animals, like I have a salmon that helps me with soul retrieval. And whenever I get done with the soul retrieval, I'll be like, okay, how did I do okay? And he'll, like, high-five me.
in a way that only a salmon can.
Exactly. So, it's, you know, I just have goofball for spirit animals and stuff. And it's fun. And I think that gives me kind of an edge as far as, like, teaching for talking to people, because I think I can see that's kind of where my practice is going, as being a bridge and presenting things in a way that people can kind of demystifying the whole shamanic thing and you know, making it, you know, pure and funner, and that people can understand it on a different level, if that makes sense.
So, okay. Well, on that note, why don't we take a short break? And then when we come back, I want to talk about the direction that your practice is leading you, and what you feel like you're specializing in.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll take a short break and we'll be right back. Ah, the journey. It's fundamental to shamanism. If you've had a journey that made a difference in your life and you feel called to share it, consider sharing it with us. In Tales from the Road, we offer the surprising stories and insights that come from your journeys with the power to change lives. Of course, respect your power. Share only as you're called to. If you're interested, contact me, John Carosella, by email at jc@fireflywillows.com. Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. I'm here talking with Patrick Corrigan, a shamanic cartoonist. And Patrick, before the break, you talked about how your landscape, your shamanic landscape, was a little bit more whimsical, and it seems like maybe you're crafting a practice that has some unique characteristics. And I really want to hear about those, about that. Tell us about
that. Okay. You know, it's like just this past week even, I got this inspiration that I would love to do. I see myself doing, like, kids' videos. Like, I could see doing a video of, like, different, how to find your spirit animals and what different animals mean, a lot of storytelling kind of things. And I've also, I would like to do a graphic novel about shamanism, explaining shamanism and the journeys and all the different aspects of it, but in comic book form that I think will make more sense to people, make people a little more friendlier, you know, because a lot of times people think of shaman or Magold as weird woo-woo kind of stuff. And I feel like part of my job this time around is to kind of be a bridge to different levels of people and different practices and kind of show the similarities of everything and to like make things like shamanism a little more accessible and a little more understandable and not so out there and weird.
Well, do you think that, I mean, it's still going to be kind of out there and weird if it's communicated through, for example, cartoons, you know?
This is true.
So do you think it's humor and humor and whimsy that is going to be the actual tool for bridging?
I think so. You know, everything people learn better, you know, laughter is the best medicine. And
well, that's for sure.
When they're laughing, when there's something funny, you know, there's always that element of, you know, no matter what the joke is, there's always that little element of truth. And it's kind of, you know, my other passion is mythology, and I just love stories, and I love the meaning of stories and this. And when I, you know, I kind of see this kind of along that same lines as bringing these deeper meanings to people through stories. You know, even Jesus had his parables, and you know,
yeah.
I think the soul is bridging that, not only bridging between people, but bridging that gap between the conscious mind and the subconscious mind, you know. That's why our souls speak to us in dreams. You know, everything's kind of metaphoric and symbolic. And the more you can get in line with the flow of what, you know, your personal images is, your personal mythology is, the better aligned you are, the better in sync with your own self you are, I think. And so that's kind of where I'm headed with my comics and stuff, is to try to people thinking about their own stories. What is their real, what's their connection to spirit and all of that?
Well, it's interesting you say that because on the program, we've been doing a series with Annette Wagner. She's taking us through something that is called the Vision Plan. And, you know, it's eight panels, which are, in a sense, it's an eight-panel story or cartoon or graphic novel, if you want to call it that. And one of the panels is called Legend. And the panel is where you describe your personal legend. If you were eavesdropping in a room, and people were talking about you 5 years into the future, what would you ideally want to hear them saying? What story would be told about you that would indicate that you had fulfilled something important, you know? And you know, a personal mythology, a personal legend is, I don't think we have a lot of that in our culture. That not a lot feeds that in our culture.
No. And I think that's one thing that's really missing from our culture is, you know, it's such a, we're in a time right now where there's so much communication, you know, that the world's become so small that we have so many cultures and so many stories to draw from that it's time, you know, it's taking all of that and reflecting it back in and coming up with our own healing stories for who we are and our own stories for how to connect with spirit, you know, whether we're borrowing, you know, Greek gods or Aesop's fables or whatever it is, you know, whatever imagery works for us, kind of like building that personal mythology of who we are. You know, I took Medicine for the Earth by Sen Biederman, and one of the things that she has us do is write a creation story. And I had already actually written one, so when we did a journey, I'm like, okay, what am I going to find out this time? And it's amazing how it had shifted and changed. But it's like that is so important for us, I think, to know. It's like I think the way we're raised is you know, God is off in his heaven someplace, and we have to appease him and do what we need to do. And so it's kind of there's not a lot of interface there. And so like a creation story helps us to kind of interface, bring spirit that much closer to us, kind of bridges that gap again to tell who we are as, you know, divinity and how we are connected to the spirit and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've actually taught a class of personal mythology, had a six-week class, and using people who knew how to do shamanic journey, and it was amazing the stories that they came up with. It's like at the beginning, we journeyed to meet our own personal bard. And so everyone had their own bard who could help them tell their story and find out what their history was. And then
That's great.
Yeah. So then we journeyed to find out what their creation story was, and we journeyed to find out what their birth story was, you know, their why they came here kind of thing. And we journeyed to, like, you know, with the idea that we are all made of, you know, electromagnetic star stuff. We're all basically stars.
Mm.
And so journeying back to that time when the whatever, you know, your body's made up of right now was part of a star, and getting that connection with the star and feeling what it's like to be a star and radiating that light and stuff like that. And by the second class, I just came up with this out of my head. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if anyone's going to get anything out of this. I don't know how it's going to go over. But by the second class, I was amazed. If it had stopped at classes, I would have been so happy and fulfilled, because the people that were taking the class just came up with the most amazing stories. And it just blew me away what the human, you know, spirit connection can do.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, I was in a presentation by Michael Mead. And he talks about storytelling, indigenous tribal storytelling, indigenous culture storytelling, and the presentation that he gave us was about uncovering personal genius and how tribal cultures, how indigenous cultures cultivated the recognition that you had a personal genius, that you had a personal role, a uniqueness that was essential, and they didn't just pay it lip service. They called you out to discover it so much. And, you know, in our culture, we educate children as if they're raw material going into a factory to be stamped
right
and imprinted with a certain kind of rigor, and they pop
right
out, and they pop out with much of their individuality beaten down way deep
right
into the subconscious, because that doesn't fit the model of the factory.
Exactly.
And it's a terrible tragedy, actually. The more I think about it, the more it makes me weep.
Yeah, me too. I have this really good friend that actually works with autistic children, and she was working with this boy. He kept kind of asking me questions and stuff, because my main animal guide is a reindeer. But this little boy just got so turned on by reindeers, and he was like, I was born from a reindeer. And this little boy was coming up, I think he was maybe 8, something like that. But he, it was like one of these things where he was telling his own story and allowed that freedom to come up with the story and where he was from, rather than being told, no, you know, these are your parents, and this is how you live, and this is how you make a job, you know, get a job. It's,
wow.
I think that's such an important part for kids, just to feed that creativity and to let them find out who they are rather than telling them who they are.
Yeah, I agree, and it's so I want to commend you for the work that you're doing to help people cultivate their personal myth, their personal story, their personal legend, because I think our uniqueness is not honored in our mass production culture. And it's not because we quote unquote, you know, choose to dishonor it so much as we've forgotten that it matters. And we've forgotten the depth of it.
And we get so afraid of expressing it.
Yeah, and we get afraid of expressing it,
Like I was telling the people in my class, it's those things that you were afraid to express as a kid, those things that you got made fun of for, those things that made you stand out in a crowd, those are your strengths. Those are the things that you came into this world to express for the betterment of everybody else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. And if you don't express them, the world, not only is the world a worse place, a more impoverished place because you're not expressing your gifts, it's a more impoverished place because you're not happy. You know, we miss the opportunity to be fulfilled, and we miss the opportunity to project our joy into the world, and it's a downer. It's a drag.
It is.
Huh.
And it's amazing how, you know, you radiate out that joy and stuff, and how many people it touches and just pulls out. And if you're not living your life, if you're not living that joy, then you're not contributing to the upliftment. You know, the world is a sadder place because you're not finding your joy.
Yeah. So you're kind of doing your own thing. I mean, you do work a regular job, right?
Yes.
So you don't make your living as a shamanic practitioner, but how does shamanism inform your daily routine?
It's interesting because, you know, I don't have to, I watch as I grow, and as I've been on the spiritual path, I've been at this job for like 12 years, I think, and who I was when I took the job and who I am now are drastically different. As I've grown spiritually, I've seen changes in the job and changes in the people around me, and it's like I don't have to go around spouting off shamanic wisdom and stuff like that. I have had a couple of people come to me for card readings, and I've actually had someone come to me and say that I was part of the reason that they get out of bed in the morning to come to work because they know I'm going to be there, and that just blew me away. It just, that was such a in the face kind of example of how you affect people and you don't even know it.
Yeah.
Because I just kind of try to be the light that I am and just try to be as authentic as I can and bring, you know, and unbeknownst to everyone else, you know, I'm talking to my spirit guides while I'm pulling orders and you know, and I always keep a piece of paper with me so I can write down little notes, little like lyrics for songs or little sketches for comics. And,
right.
You know, and like for example, with the Boston thing that happened recently, like as soon as I heard about that, it's like I stopped wherever I was in the aisle. I shut my eyes and I said, I have a guide that helps me with psychopomp. I'm like, okay, you're going to Boston. And he's like, okay. And so in a way, being a shamanic practitioner, it's kind of like being a superhero. I keep picturing myself as Peter Parker, and I'm doing all these things that nobody knows about, yet I'm being, you know, showing up late for work because I had to take care of a lost puppy or whatever it is. You know?
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good place to be, I think. That is a good place to be. And so what would you say is the most fulfilling aspect of being a shamanic practitioner for you? Or is,
you know,
is there one thing? I mean, there might not be.
Wow. That's a really big question. I think just as it's the one, like the universe just kind of, as you keep growing and growing and going deeper and deeper, and as you're just living your life, it's like, for me, the people around me that are getting affected by who I am, just the feedback I get is just so fulfilling. Like, it shows me that I'm on the right path, that I'm doing the right thing, and it also lets me know that I'm helping other people empower themselves, and other people are finding their own personal life and stuff as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of one of those things that keeps me going, is that knowing, you know, it's kind of a mutual benefit thing, that I'm going and getting fulfilled from it, and other people are going and getting fulfilled from what I'm doing. So you can't really get any better than that, I think.
Cool. All right. Well, we're going to take another short break. And then I want to talk about some of the extremes. You know, I imagine as a shamanic cartoonist, you've been a participant in some extreme shamanism.
Oh yeah.
So all right, so we'll be right back.
We hope you're enjoying today's program. You can find archives of A Shamanic Life and our other thoughtful and provocative programs at blogtalkradio.com/fireflywillowslive. Check out Convergence, John's monthly radio magazine where science and mysticism meet, the third Sunday of every month, or one of our other interesting shows and their interesting hosts, blogtalkradio.com/fireflywillowslive. Come join us.
We're back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. I'm here tonight with Patrick Corgan, a shamanic cartoonist. Okay, Patrick.
Uh-huh.
I want to do a most amazing, most terrifying, or among the most amazing, among the most terrifying. What was one of your most amazing experiences as a shamanic practitioner so far?
It's like so hard to pick just one because it's kind of a cumulative thing where it's like every time I do a soul retrieval, you know, it's like I learn new things and it just kind of blows the last one out of the water. But if I had the first soul retrieval I ever did. The person went from being very, very depressed, like borderline almost suicidal, to call me a week later saying, "Oh, I got to meet with you. I tell you what I did." And she went to re-enrolling in school, going back to college to get the degree that she had always wanted to do. And I'm sitting here going, "Holy crap!" You know, I basically just sat here with my eyes closed and had, you know, talk to the spirits and do these things, but this person's life just totally took a 180, and I've had other friends mention how much more of herself that they see now and how much happier, stuff like that. So
that's wonderful.
I always tell her she's my poster child for soul retrieval.
Well, it's good to have at least one of those.
Yeah.
That's great. All right. Well, how about a most challenging or among the most challenging experiences? You know, the shamanic path isn't always clear. It's not always easy to walk. What have you come up against that might be a teaching for the rest of us?
I've suffered years from anxiety and depression, and when I started on shamanic path, that started to ease up, and I'm on a medication for that. I got a soul retrieval myself, kind of with the idea of trying to go off the medication and thinking that I could fill in those holes that the medication was filling in and become more whole myself. And it didn't quite work the way I had expected it to. I ended up having to go back onto the medication. But what I ended up doing, I was talking to another friend who's on the same medication, is also a shamanic practitioner, and we both did journeys to the medication to see what's going on, what they're doing for us. And I had this amazing journey where it was like an Arthurian epic, like Holy Grail thing. And I was like riding this horse and levitating over the landscape was this giant head, just the head of this crazed king with crooked teeth and everything. And I was really scared. I was like, "Oh my God, that's the medication. That's the spirit of the medication." My horse just kept going and ran right into it to find out that was just like the outside, the hologram of it. And inside there was this man who, when I came in, I got off my horse, and this man came to me. And he was like, "I am at your service." And he knelt before me. Very, you know, he had a cape and all this stuff. And he was saying that it doesn't matter what it is, but whatever it is that helps you be whole is medicine. And that, you know, he said I probably wouldn't need to be on the medication my whole life, but that there was nothing wrong with it. You know, it's medicine is medicine. It's all, you know, we're all one thing. Everything is energy. And so I was able to look to read, kind of spouting all the spiritual wisdom, and it's like a hypocrisy of some sort, but really it's not that. Everything in our life, whatever helps us to be more whole, you know, if it's a chemical thing, it's a spiritual thing, it's all one thing, basically, is the lesson there.
Wow. I think that's really valuable information, and it's a valuable perspective that, you know, it really comes down to we are all one thing. Everything is one thing. It's all part of the same mix. And if we are, you know, kind of like humble and grateful and open-hearted.
Yes.
Right. If we can leave our ego aside and you know, be okay with receiving help in whatever form.
Right.
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 That help can then become more sacred and more holy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and it's that whole thing too about there's all, you know, it took me the longest time to get this, but that whole idea that there's a gift in everything, that every challenge has a gift in it. And so because of that particular experience, you know, and others since then, I've been able to really, okay, this is whatever situation, this is really a crappy situation, and I hate being here, but what is the gift? And finding that gratefulness to, you know, it's like, okay, I'm in this situation for a reason. This is only going to make me stronger. You know, what is the gift here? What is the lesson here? And approaching it that way as a friend and as grateful rather than, oh, I got to fight this, you know, and
right.
Get up in arms and put on armor and all that kind of stuff. It's more approaching it like I do at medicine card readings, which is working with animal guides. And there's the story of the deer and looking at things with those huge eyes of wonder and how the story is that Great Spirit called deer up to the top of the mountain, but there was a troll halfway up the mountain that kept scaring all the animals away. And deer was the only one that walked up to the troll and said, so what is it that makes you so angry? Why are you so sad? And the troll had no answer, had not, you know, expected anything like that. It just melted away. Mm. So I use that. That's like one of those little stories, one of those little mythologies in the back of my head at all times. It's like, okay, how can I look at this with eyes of a child, with eyes of wonder?
Yeah.
What is the lesson, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I think gentleness towards yourself and towards the world is one of the, I mean, that's deer medicine to me, right? It's
yeah.
Sure, steady, and gentle.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So what's percolating for you? What are you feeling compelled to explore or expand in your shamanic work as you're growing? What's cooking for you?
Well, I had a vision not long ago, and I saw myself leading drum circles and leading some kind of shamanic circles and stuff like that. And that, it scares me and it excites me at the same time. So I think it's kind of the direction I'm going in is to leading my own groups and teaching more, doing a little bit more teaching and that kind of thing. And you know, I there's a park nearby here, and I saw myself like with a abalone shell full of sage and blessing this park and having this whole big drum circle around me. And I would love to do stuff like that.
And it'd probably be really good for the park too.
Yes, exactly. Kind of do the healing for the park.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Well, you certainly have a unique gift. You know, the
thank you.
And, you know, and it's, you know, we've emphasized that you're a cartoonist, but you're also a poet, and you know, you write music, and mm-hmm. you know, so there's a lot to you. Yes. But I mean, I think you know, you've brought a centeredness to your life through your cartooning. And that center is whimsy and freedom and childlike wonder. And I think that's a great formula for being for working with spirit. So that's cool.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
So we're just about out of time. Is there anything that final thoughts that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Just the one thing I always tell, like, my classes or whatever, there's no rules. It's all guidelines.
Kind of like the pirate code.
Yes, exactly. See, I draw my personal mythology from modern mythology, too. So, yeah, it's all guidelines. There's no rules.
Mm, that's a good and healthy thought. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And if folks want to get to know you or your work a little bit better, where should we direct them?
Probably to my website. It's at perchingwolfstudios.com.
Okay, and that's perching as in like a bird perching?
Yes.
like, because it's the Winged Wolf. So Perching Wolf Studios, Perching Wolf, Wolf, studios.com.
Exactly.
All right, great. Well, Patrick, thank you very much for spending time with us this evening. I really enjoyed the conversation. I love your work.
Thank you, so did I.
I hope we get to hear more from you soon.
I hope so, too. Thank you. It was very much an honor.
All right. Okay, and we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back.
Hi, this is John Carosella, your host for A Shamanic Life. I hope you're enjoying the show. I love creating this show and sharing our guests with you. If you'd like to support the show, your contributions in any amount are gratefully received. If you'd like to help, send your contribution via PayPal to asl@fireflywillows.com. That's asl@fireflywillows.com. Sincerely, and with love and light, I thank you.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And with me now is Annette Wagner, creativity coach and shamanic practitioner, innovative artist. And Annette and I have been talking about the vision plan, business plan from the heart, and this is our fifth segment.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk this time about beloveds.
That is correct.
All right. So, Annette, reset our context a little bit, and then let's talk about this fourth panel.
So the vision plan that we've been working on and that I work on with people is really about connecting your right and your left brain and answering questions that help you find your purpose and your passion in life, that you connect you to your dream. And this is about, this is a mechanism, if you will, or a process of deep inquiry that really allows you to connect into why you're here. It's like connecting spirit to everything else that you're doing. And it is a business plan, and there are actually words that go with these things that correlate to actually business plans.
So what would the beloveds be?
Beloveds would be customers, users, clients.
Ah, okay. All right. So whatever intention we've set for the vision plan, the beloveds would be the equivalent of, or the corollary of, our customers or those we are serving.
Absolutely. In fact, okay. The phrase I like to use is to think of this as those we serve.
Okay.
And I use the word beloved, and those of us who teach vision plans specifically use beloveds because client, customer, user are very sterile terms. They don't feel like they have a lot of humanity in them. And if you take the term and you say beloveds, and it's got that word love in the center of it.
Yeah.
Be loved.
Right.
And you're talking about who you're serving. It takes you into a completely different state of being and a place of connection than you're going to have when you're talking about, oh, that's just a bunch of users.
Right. Well, you know, I think that's when you said customers and users and clients sounds sterile, that kind of really hit home for me for some reason. It's like, what the heck is a customer? What is a client? What is a user? What are those things? They're objects. They're what intimacy do we naturally have with the occupiers of those words?
Right. In fact, those words set them away from us in some ways.
Yeah, they do.
Because we objectify them with the words. I think that's an excellent observation. Is we put this label on them, which puts them in a category, which then puts these like layers between us and them,
yeah,
between our heart and their heart.
Yeah.
And then it's like, how do we connect with them? I remember when I was in high tech and I spent 25 years talking about users. So I very well know this because we would categorize and have different levels of users. But there was this interesting pattern that came up in the last 10 or 15 years I was working in high tech where we would write things called scenarios.
Right, right.
And scenarios, interestingly enough, were stories about our users that made them real.
Yeah, we had the notion of personas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the same exact thing. Personas, scenarios, stories. People started developing all these practices for taking these things called users and making them real. Why did they do that?
Mm.
to connect to them.
Yeah, to create the empathic connection. I think that's really a big deal. So in the vision plan, how do we approach the beloveds?
So this is a very important panel. And this is when you're going to approach, like you're going to approach someone who you want to become the most passionate lover in your life, or somebody who already is, somebody who is very important to you. This panel lights up all the other panels and gives meaning to them in many ways, because this is about the people that you serve. And if you really are connected to these people, what happens when you serve them is you're going to walk away filled with more energy than you brought into the relationship. I remember the first time I taught a workshop using intentional creativity, and I was very nervous, and I spent hours preparing my studio and getting everything ready, and I thought, I'm going to be exhausted when this thing is done because I've put in all this preparation work. And when the last person walked out the door and I could hear the group of them giggling and laughing and chatting out the front gate, I closed the door and just went,
yee-haw!
And I was completely filled up with energy, and I was like, I wanted to go dancing.
Wow.
Which totally surprised me. And my teachers had told me that this was going to happen, is when you truly connect the people who you serve, it replenishes you and nourishes you. So that's why this panel is so important. And it's really all about those we serve, those we love, those we're serving with our work. And so it's important to really think about where you're drawn and think about the language of who those people are. I think this is one that takes us deeper into the writing, because we're going to want to like write things down and put symbols. I tend to put the symbol of a heart on the panel.
Mm-hmm.
And then inside of the heart, I write, sometimes I suggest people write a letter to their beloveds.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
To tell them you don't have to worry about telling them what you're offering or how you're going to get them, but just write a love letter to them. Or write a letter asking them to come to you, and just start to try and figure out the language around who they are and, what characteristics they may have. Because one of the other things that's also hard sometimes, especially for spiritual practitioners, is we say, well, it's anyone who wants healing.
Right. Yeah. So how do we, in the purest sense, right, our beloveds are, is the creation. It's everything. It's everyone and everything. So how do we narrow this down? How do we make this, turn this into a more tractable, I guess I'm the thing like fertile, panel, other than just, like the universe.
Right. Right. So one of the things that will happen as you begin this panel, and this is where this vision plan is, we're going through it in a sort of logical sequence, but the reality of when we do it is it's not logical at all. And you'll find that you jump in between, because you'll find that the next side of the vision plan, when we move into offerings and sharing and other things, is going to inform some of this as well. So what you start to do is you start asking yourself questions, and you start visualizing. Visualize yourself, well, first of all, you ask yourself questions like, am I teaching people one-on-one?
Okay.
Am I working with people one-on-one? Am I working with people in a group? How big is the group I'm working with? Where is it located? And this is where you can actually have someone work with you, and I sometimes take people in on a little visioning, so just close their eyes and envision themselves doing their work and looking around themselves and saying, like I said, is it a group? Is it a one-on-one? Is it in a studio? Is it in a rented space? Are you out on the road? Are you doing it online? Are you doing it in front of a microphone like you're doing it? And you start to bring in some of those things. And then you also ask yourself questions like, are you working with 6-year-olds?
Mm.
Are you working with a 17-year-old? Are you working with people who are adults? Are you working with men? Are you working with women? Are you working with a particular kind of wound? And you just start having this conversation with yourself. Like, there's women who I've worked with who said they think, they just want to heal everyone, but then when they start to have conversations about it, they realize that the wisdom that they have coming from inside of them, that the people they keep connecting with are, say, for one woman, it was women who'd been through a particular kind of trauma, right? And that they were drawn to work with those kinds of women. And that's where it's sometimes helpful to work with someone else who can
Oh, yeah, like a buddy. So
yeah,
that you're
like a buddy or coach or something.
Talking
someone.
Back and forth over it.
Yeah, it's to just draw some of the threads out and just have someone who can ask those questions and say, well, it's not about offering advice. It's about saying, you know, who's in the room? You know, is that resonating?
Right.
And to pull that out. Like I have typically always write down, well, people who want to connect to their creativity. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, my teachers will say, and then, you know, and who else? So I said men and women and children, right, in the past. And then I sat and thought about it and realized, but actually when I work with children, it's not the same thing. I mean, I do things with children, not very often, but I have done things with children. But
right.
Children have a completely different way they connect into their creativity than those of us who are adults who've gone through that phase in our lives where we lost or feel like we've lost connection.
Right.
So I realized, well, then it's probably more, you know, men and women. And then I ask myself, well, is it just women? But then I have men who show up periodically.
Right.
So it's an organic thing, and you're going to have to, it's kind of going to kind of feel like you have threads you're going to pull on.
Okay. And what's the thing that you hold on to through this process of querying, right? You're querying back and forth, but there's got to be something, because otherwise it could, you know, fall into a, I don't know, like a, well, it could end up being like a business plan,
yep.
Like an analysis of your customer base,
right?
But that's not really what we're doing here. So there's something that has to be, I'm imagining, has to be held all during this process of querying.
Yes, and that's the dreams and your passion or purpose. So remember, as we've gotten to this point, we hopefully have painted and written a bit about asking the question about what's my passion and my purpose and what's my big dream. Now, also, when I do this in a workshop scenario, one of the things that we do is sometimes a small draft of the plan where we just take an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper, fold it up into 8 panels, and I walk people through the process of what the questions are for each panel. So that, like, I'm planting seeds in their head.
Right.
So they know that when we turn the vision plan over to the other side, we're going to talk about offerings. What are our gifts? What are our offerings? How are we going to share it? What is our abundance? How are we connected back out? So they kind of have the context of the big thing. And what you're doing as you talk about beloved is you're saying, you can say to yourself, well, I want to meet and work with this set of people, but then but my dream says this. Okay.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so the dream and the purpose or passion are two of the things that kind of keep you within the context. What you're doing is you've set an intention for the vision plan. You're talking about, you've answered this question about passion and purpose, and the passion and purpose fits into the bigger context of the dream. And now you're saying, who are the people inside of that passion and purpose and dream and legend? Because you've also talked about your legend of who you are. You probably already have some idea of your offerings.
This
is an interesting panel because it draws on the other panels.
Yeah, and you said that it lights up the other panels.
It feeds them, too.
Yeah,
the other panels feed this one, and it feeds them back. It's that cycle of nourishing.
Well, I think maybe that's because this one is the one that's the most... This is the first part of the vision plan that's targeted at an externality.
Yes.
Right? It's targeted at something that is... clearly outside the self,
mm-hmm.
right? If it is, I mean, you can still love, you can love yourself too, right? But,
right.
But it's the alter ego at the very least, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing that's not being attended to.
Yeah, it's the thing, well, or...
Because there's a need, right?
You might be tending to it, but you haven't brought it all the way into presence.
Right.
You need to, like, bring the presence of those beloveds into focus.
Yeah. Yes, into
it's like
focus.
You need to bring them close to your heart, basically.
You need to bring them close to your heart. That's actually what you need to do, right? You
yep.
want to bring your beloveds close to your heart. So you need to. So those threads that you said that you feel, are they threads that connect to your fingers, to your action self, or are they threads that connect to your heart and tug on your heart?
Heart. I see them as like red threads that are going out of your heart that are connecting to your beloveds and your... And what you're doing is you're kind of tugging on them and bringing them into focus. You can get a clearer sense of who these people are.
So in this exercise, it isn't just, and in fact can't be just the intellectual exercise of thinking about who you serve. It actually has to be thinking about how you feel when you're serving them.
Yeah. It's never just an intellectual exercise on any of these panels. It's about bringing in that intuitive side and merging it with the intellectual and taking your foot and stepping into that other world and saying, who wants to come through? Who wants to stand in front of me? Because the other thing you have to be careful of is we have an analytical side that's going to say, well, I think if you're going to do coaching, this is who your user should be.
Right, exactly.
Right? And what you want to do is kind of set that to the side and open the door of your heart and say, who's standing there that I'm not paying attention to or that I don't think, you know, like who's standing right there asking me to serve them, but I may not realize that they're standing there. You have to open the door to opportunity, to mystery, and to see.
Yeah. Opening the door to opportunity and mystery that's really challenging to set aside the analytical mind for the purpose of seeing who's there. That's actually pretty challenging work.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I can see how you have to have your passion and your dream inform that process, because otherwise it could be really, you know, it could be anyone and everyone, or it could be no one.
And this is also why when I teach vision plans, we want to go all the way through it in a sacred container, because there's a continuity and a flow that begins to happen. And also I can catch people when they start to fall into the critic or fall into the analytical side. And I actually do quite silly things to catch them. I actually have like this little cheap magic wand that makes a little wet magic wand noise, you know.
You poke them with the wand?
Well, I don't actually poke them, but I will, you know, maybe I'll bring it next time.
We'll try it. So is there anything else we want to share about the Beloveds panel?
No, I think the main thing for people to think about is, I'll leave them with this image. That'll be a way to do it, is to take the time to be still and silent. And maybe the image that they hold inside of them is a heart, and the door of the heart is open. And they're going out to have a conversation with their beloved.
Great. And again, if folks want to learn more about you and your work, how should we direct them?
They can go to my website, AnnetteWagnerArt.com, and I have blog posts. I have actually the prior recordings of the vision plan stuff. I have workshops, I have coaching sessions, and they're more than welcome to contact me for more conversation.
All right, excellent. Thank you, Annette. Thank you, Annette Wagner, and we'll be right back.
Do you have a workshop, protocol, or modality that you'd like to explore with our audience? Come and join us on the air. Share why you love it, how it helps us shine, and empowers us to live more fully. Share your inspiration. You never know who might be listening and whose lives you'll touch. Contact John Carosella on Facebook or by email at jc@fireflywillows.com for details.
Welcome back. This is A Shamanic Life, and I'm John Carosella. Now, our next segment is a very special segment. Tonight we have a segment devoted to activism. And I'm actually thinking of including an activism segment as a regular part of this show. So let me know what you think about that. And if you're stepping out into the world and shining for a cause that you believe in, drop me a note at jc@fireflywillows.com. Tonight, though, we have a very, very special guest. This lady and I have a lot of history. We've had some years. And I've learned that if I see her approaching with a pie from Marie Callender's, the world is about to change. She innocently tripped my whole family into starting Firefly Willows, and then, not so innocently, I suspect, snagged us again to launch Firefly Willows LIVE, this whole radio adventure that we're on. We're going to talk about what else she's up to, what she's stirring up at the Pachamama Alliance, and how we might all get involved. She's a co-founder of Firefly Willows LIVE and a host of Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn. I offer a warm and loving welcome to Mildred Lynn McDonald.
Mildred Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, John. And guess what I have right here? A pie.
Run, everybody! Run!
Run for the hills.
So, yeah, I figured that probably you did have a pie because you were going to talk about the Pachamama Alliance, and that's about changing the world, right?
Yeah, well, it's about changing the world from the position that's within you. So that's what I find the Pachamama Alliance brings to the table. And I may have shared with you before that I searched and searched and searched for some form of group or community for about 2 years before I found the Pachamama Alliance. And how I knew the Pachamama Alliance was the place for me is when I attended the Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream Symposium in Ottawa, Canada, maybe about 2 or 3 years ago. And the messages went right into my heart and right through my spirit. And I had one of those ah moments when all the chakras lined up and I knew I was exactly where I was supposed to be. So it was magical.
So you've been working with these guys for how long now?
Well, I attended a symposium, and basically what that is an introduction to their program. Mm-hmm. And then I let that simmer for a while, and when I moved to California, I reconnected with the Pachamama Alliance. And 2 weeks ago, I attended a three-day intensive to learn how to become a facilitator. So that's my newest and brightest.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about the Pachamama Alliance and how it came to be and what its mission is.
Okay, well, the Pachamama Alliance, it's a fascinating story. To me, it's almost like a fairy tale. And you can sit back and you can really visualize this whole scenario. But according to legend or according to the information that I have been given, the Achua people in the Amazon, their shamans and their elders, they started to have dreams around in the 1980s. And these dreams started to identify a threat or something negative coming from the modern world that would have a severe impact not only on their culture and their land, but the whole world. And it turns out that it was surrounded in the area of oil and the forest being cut down so people could have more oil. That seemed to be the driver. So they kept having these dreams, and then in 1995, or a little bit before that, they sent out a message to the modern world, and they said this. They said, it was a bold move, actually, John, because they were talking to the world, which actually was coming towards them as a threat. So that's kind of amazing, the strategy they used. But they put a call out to the modern world, and they asked for partners who would work with them in keeping the world pristine, keeping it sustainable, keeping it beautiful. And three people answered the call. They were John and Lynn Twist and John Perkins, and they actually went down to the Amazon. They met with the Achua people. They formed a partnership, and in 1995, the Pachamama Alliance was born. And I'm sure your listeners know what the word Pachamama means.
Oh, you don't.
Pardon me?
Can you share what it means?
Yeah, Pachamama is Mother Earth. Mother Earth in the broadest, deepest, most magical, beautiful, spectacular form.
Well, that's a good alliance to be part of, I think.
It's the big one.
Yeah, right.
It's the big one, John. So they had their first symposium in 2005, and now there's about 4,000, I needed to add another zero on there, 4,000 facilitators in 72 countries, and I'm one of the facilitators.
So what does that mean?
Well, it means that I've been trained to go into any community or even into anybody's living room and deliver the Awakening the Dream or Changing the Dream Symposium.
Ah,
and
okay.
What it's based on, what they really want to get at, is they want to bring forth an environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, and socially just human presence on the planet.
Hmm.
Go ahead.
No. So those are the main thrusts, those are the initiatives that the Pachamama Alliance is encouraging.
Yes, they encourage these three prongs. And what's unique, or what I found spoke to my heart and my spirit, is that they understand that these three areas are intertwined. So you can't really address one without touching the other. And the Awakening the Dream or Changing the Dream Symposium, from my perspective and from the perspective of many other people, it transforms you. So what happens is you're going along in life. This is my story. Going along in life, like many people, listening to the news or exposing yourself to all types of information, and all of a sudden you start to wake up. And it gets your time and attention. And at the same time, it starts to overwhelm you. So the old adrenaline starts moving, and maybe you move into a little bit of fear. And you think, oh, my heavens, I feel overwhelmed. Where do I go? Where do I start? I want to do something, but I'm confused and I'm not clear. Well, that's where the Pachamama Alliance has stepped in with their symposium. So they're not saying that they're the experts of the world. They're not saying they have all the answers. They're saying, come with us and we'll take you on a journey. We'll take you on a journey that goes inside and will help put a structure around what you're feeling and what you'd like to do. And then we'll present some opportunities, listen to your heart, see what speaks to you. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's part of this, you know, I've said it earlier on the show, this the idea of sustainability has to come from within first.
Yeah, exactly.
Feed us enough to allow us to keep doing them.
And you know when there's a connection. Because I tried the other route. I identified that I was feeling overwhelmed and a lot of this information was coming in and I desperately wanted to do something. So you go off in all directions trying to find your community. I searched for 2 years for my people, which was actually quite comical when I look back at it. What was I thinking?
Well, that's not uncommon, though. I mean, I think people do, they are looking for a place that feels like home, that is people that feel like family, that has an energy that feels like it's in harmony with who you are. And, you know, you were bound to find that eventually.
I was, and I always had my handy dandy pie with me, right, in my knapsack. But in retrospect, when I look back, and I'm sure your listeners can relate to this, the key word is what was I thinking rather than what was I feeling.
Oh, very clever. Yeah.
So when I ran into this group, it was the heart and spirit connection. My intellect had nothing to do with it whatsoever. So that was a big lesson, a wonderful lesson to learn.
So how do we get involved if we want to participate?
Well, the Pachamama Alliance has a lovely website. It's www.pachamama.org. And I also should mention that when you're attending the symposium and you're receiving information, and it's in four key areas, it's where are we, how did we get here, what's possible now, and where do we go from here, you can go to the website and it gives you more information under those umbrellas. So if you find your heart speaks to the whales, well, I am sure that there are many people that are part of the Pachamama Alliance that would be able to have a conversation about whales or direct you to someone who can help you in that area. So it's a portal. That's how I look at it. It's a portal, a trusted source. And also, because I was very particular about the organization that I wanted to attach myself to, because it was a heart connection, wanted to share that they're also very, very financially in integrity. That was a big thing for me. So if you went on their website, you'll notice about four designations that they're well thought of in that regard. So it's nice to know that things are all above board and transparent.
Yeah, that they're spending the money wisely, the money that they get wisely. It's a good thing. So the Pachamama Alliance is a big, like a big sacred container to hold
the worthy causes, but also to hold us as individuals when we get to that place where the anxiety and panic sets in and we want to do something, but we don't quite know where to start.
Exactly. And for those listeners who are very, very touched and feel a deep connection with the Amazon, the Pachamama Alliance also arranges journeys down into that area to actually meet with the Achiwa people. I believe that about 200 individuals have already gone down to the Amazon at various times, and it's supposed to be absolutely amazing. So that's something I'd love to do. And you're welcome to join us, John.
Well, you know, I do. I'm going to find my way down to the Amazon and to the Inca ruins in Peru and so on. It is calling me. I'm just not sure quite when that's going to happen. So when are you booking your tickets?
I'd like to go next year.
Next year. Okay. All right.
We're under the facilitator. I'd like to take the Pachamama Alliance Symposium to the east coast of Canada. Give it a run a few times with that paper. Celtic music.
Come to the Amazon to the sound of Celtic pipes.
It's a really wonderful initiative. I had no idea that this type of organization existed. And now that I've gone through the program and that I've become a facilitator, I've met their community of people. I attended a huddle in September in Petaluma where people from all over the world came and talked about what was going on in their communities. I have to say I'm so impressed. I feel proud to be part of this organization, this nonprofit organization, and it fills a place in my heart and in my spirit.
That's great. Well, it's good that you... I mean, you know, you're a person of such integrity that I'm not surprised that you took the time that it took, you know, 2 years to find the right activist home for your soul. And I think that's an encouraging sign for the rest of us who might be interested in looking into the Pachamama Alliance, because, you know, I know that they do good things. They're of high integrity and they have good people. So. So, Mildred Lynn, is there anything else you want to share with us before we move on?
Yes, I wanted to share that if you've read the book called Blessed Unrest by Paul Hawken and you resonated with that book, you will resonate with Pachamama Alliance. That's what I'd like to share.
Blessed Unrest by Paul Hawkins.
That's something that's on your radar, or you know that this would be an organization that would speak to you.
Great. Okay, and Mildred Lynn, if folks want to get in touch with you and learn more about you and your work, where should we direct them?
I would simply go to the two radio shows. Mildred Lynn and What's Your Prescription for Balance with Mildred Lynn and Dr. Glenna Calder. That's the best way to get a hold of me.
All right, great. Mildred, thank you so much for joining us. I've been itching to have you on one of my shows just because I know you'd be an awesome guest and participant. So thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, John. My pleasure.
All right. I'll talk soon.
Bye, Dan.
And we'll be right back.
Yes, we've added to our lineup of lively, thought-provoking shows. But don't forget our original Sunday morning lineup at 10:30 a.m. Join us for Healing Conversations with Mildred Lynn McDonald every first Sunday. Revolution with Heisey Ludmers every second Sunday. Convergence with John Carosella every third Sunday. And our popular on-air call-in show, the fourth Sunday of every month. We're excited. Give us a listen as we continue to create new and entertaining ways for you to shine your inner light. Join us at Firefly Willows, LIVE.
Welcome back. I'm John Carosella, and this is A Shamanic Life. And with me now is Gina Carosella, here for the sensory experience. Welcome, Gina.
Hi.
So what are we experiencing this time?
Today we are experiencing Rattus rattus, the common roof rat.
Now, how is it that we're coming to experience Rattus rattus?
Well, recently a small orphan rat was put into my keeping. Recently, my dogs found a rat's nest, and unfortunately, my dogs are terriers, and went about the business of being terriers.
Quickly dispatching a whole host of them.
Yes, and one of the babies was rescued from the
doom.
Onslaught.
From doom.
And the baby was no more than 10 to 12 days old. Her eyes hadn't opened.
Mm-hmm.
So we took her in, and I took over full-time care for her. And so she wasn't weaned at that point either. So I started with basically bottle feeding her, and we're working her up to eating solid foods and, you know, starting to explore the world.
And she's grown like a weed.
She has. She's gotten much, much bigger. When we first brought her in, she was no bigger than about the size of my thumb.
Mm.
And now her body is about as long as my hand, and she's got that and a little bit more in tail.
Oh, her tail is ridiculously long. It's amazing. It's really cute. So this little creature started out pretty quiet.
Yes, when we first brought her in, she was so small, and she was so fragile and little. She didn't move around a lot. She just wanted to cuddle up against something warm and be snuggled.
Mm.
And as she has grown, she's gotten much more active, and she's really, really fast.
That's amazing. It really is stunning to me how quick this little creature can accelerate and turn corners and...
And she can jump.
And she can jump.
She's very, very agile, very fast. Her reaction speed is amazing.
Mm. So we don't know what the future holds for our little friend, but we certainly are enjoying the experience of her in the present.
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to share with us about this experience before we start?
Nope. I think covers it.
Okay. Well, then why don't you share with us Rattus Rattus.
Rattus rattus, the common roof rat. This one is young, a month old at most. She has round black eyes and unexpected movement. Fawn back and white belly and charcoal tail. She is light and quick and sudden. She has twitching whiskers and pretty pink paws reaching up for contact. She is Rory, or Rocky, or Batman, depending on who you ask. But that is neither here nor there. She is a baby without a family. She is my baby, since before her eyes opened for the first time. She is a hand's length from nose to rump, and that plus a little more in tail. Her clever paws grip and grab as she scampers, faster than it seems something so small should go. They tickle, delicate points and searching movement, as she rests them against my chin, though they are far eclipsed by the brush of whiskers, hair thin and more than an inch long, on my skin. She is unexpectedly warm, a little ball of heat when she curls up in my sleeve. Her tan and pale fur is soft and smooth, sleek like silk and textured like velvet. When she's excited, she squeaks and chirps, eager sounds that match the rapid pace of indrawn breath. Her round, translucent ears swivel forward and back again when she hears something of note. She is frustration in unrelenting movement in one moment, and bliss in sleepy cuddling the next.
Are you a spiritually inspired musician or performance artist? Join our show for Spirit, Muse, and Song. We'd love to enjoy your work and your story, and share it with our audience. Contact us at facebook.com/shamaniclife, or send a message to Karen Armstrong, Karyn, at shamaniclife.com, or John Carosella, JC, at fireflywillows.com. We're excited to hear from you.
A Shamanic Life. I'm John Carosella, and up next is our segment, Spirit, Muse, and Song, where we uncover and share spiritually inspired music and other performance art, and speak with the artists. So our guest and our selection tonight is the music of Jeff Oster. As one of the few trumpet flugelhorn artists working in ambient terrain, Jeff draws from a rich background of classically trained, jazz-tinged horn study, mixed with contemporary electronica and loop-based electro-orchestral bed tracks. Three of Jeff's albums, Released, True, and Surrender, were voted by broadcasters worldwide as Album of the Year for 2005, 2007, and 2011 at the ZMR Music Awards. Let's listen to a cut from his 2011 album, Surrender. This piece is called 53 Mirrors. Thank you. And that was 53 Mirrors by Jeff Oster. And we are privileged and delighted to have with us in the studio tonight, Jeff Oster. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Beautiful to be here, sir. How are you tonight?
Well, after that tune, I feel pretty darn good, actually.
Excellent. Me too.
There's something about the way you treat this brass instrument, this very powerful and typically edgy instrument, that you turn it into this thing that is way more liquid. You know?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, there's that, but I think also, you know, there's an instrument like the trumpet, which is, or flugelhorn, which is what that was, which is the sort of mellower cousin of the trumpet, right? Same key, but can't play it quite as high and a little bit, you know, sort of more rounded and warm, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The instrument, I think, is an extension of the person that plays it, right? Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I know a lot of really mellow trumpet players when you talk to them, but when they play, it's all very high energy and loud and, you know, high notes and all that. And I tend to sort of operate at a pretty fast pace in life, but this is a ability to express probably the slower vibration that's on the inside of me.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I mean, I really love New York City, but my favorite place, you know, in the world is Big Sur, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know?
I totally get the difference.
Right. And you know, I can walk really fast in New York and see a lot of things and keep up, right? But, you know, the idea of being in a place that breathing deep is sort of natural and that's what my horn playing is, and that's how it comes out, you know.
Yeah. So now, have you studied jazz though, right?
Well, I was trained. You know, I started playing when I was 8 years old. So, you know, we're almost, you know, 50 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit less than that. And a lot of it was in school and with private lessons, and that was, you know, mostly classical work. And then starting in sort of high school, started to play some jazz. But then my first actual paying gig was with a three-piece rock power trio playing Sweet Caroline and Us and Them by Pink Floyd, you know.
I would pay to hear a three-piece band with a trumpet doing Pink Floyd. That must have been amazing.
They didn't really know what to do with me, actually. And frankly, I started to learn how to play percussion and all kinds of other instruments because, you know, not every power trio song can really use a trumpet, you know. Pretty interesting stuff. But then, you know, I sort of went on. I played in a band that played a lot of Chicago, you know, because that was back when Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears were happening. And
yeah.
And I, you know, moved to Oregon, and I got in the jazz band at the University of Oregon for a while up in Eugene, and then decided to move to L.A. to, you know, be the next Herb Alpert, and moved down there and ended up playing in Vegas and Atlantic City and Lake Tahoe with, you know, a funk band, you know, sort of the Jacksons and some James Brown and Bobby Caldwell and all that. And then, you know, finally in 2003, after all those years, I started to do some ambient music like you hear on my records now, you know.
And so, how did that happen? How did you make that transition? What pulled you there?
Well, when I spent my almost 20 years in Los Angeles, this was way before Pro Tools or any kind of computer-based recording capability. So it was, in order for me to make music, it would have to be hiring a bass player and a drummer and a guitar player and, you know, editing tape. And it was quite an ordeal to do that. And you always would count on those kinds of musicians and what they can play and what they can't play to shape what it was that that I would do. And then in the early 2000s, I bought a Sony VAIO computer, and it had a Screen Blast Acid on it, which was a Sony music program, right? Mm. A little bit like Pro Tools, but sort of a free version of it. And I just started surfing the web, found these sites that had these little 4-bar or 8-bar loops, you know, royalty-free loops of like a synthesizer part or a bass part or a drum part. And I sort of gravitated towards this sort of spacey, mellow, sort of Wyndham Hill slash Pink Floyd vibe, right, with the, these tracks. So I would upload them into this software and sort of mix and match them until I had some sort of a bed track, a little a song playing, you know. And I'd walk around with the song for a long time, and by process of humming and listening, I would come up with a melody that I would then play on the trumpet. And this was before I was in this. I didn't do it. I did this all in my basement, you know. So this Sony VAIO came with one of those little plastic microphones that you speak into when you you know, that come with the thing, right?
Yeah.
So I used to stand in the back of the room and put all the reverb on to make it sound like it was I was in a big room, because if you stand close to it with a trumpet, it totally, you know, overloads the yeah. microphone. Right?
Yeah.
So I did that, and you know, I would do this a lot of times at 2 a.m. and have a mute in and all echoey. And so I started to make these sort of ambient songs, right, with my horn. And I've always been a tone of a player, right? I've never been a bebop, a lot of notes guy, and a very melodic. And as you could hear on, you know, 53 Mirrors, right? It was, I like to make it sound pretty. Always have. It's always been my, my calling card, so to speak. Right.
Mm.
And so back then there was MP3.com was a website where you could upload your songs. And I started to do that. And all of a sudden, I was getting, you know, 40,000 streams a month all around the world, and number
yeah,
one.
So this music is. I mean, where do you feel it? I feel it in my heart and in my solar plexus. You know, I kind of feel it in this opening, relaxing of my power centers kind of place.
Yeah.
How about you?
If you were to ask me that without saying what you said, I would have said the exact same thing. At my heart and the sort of the upper part of my solar plexus in my stomach, right? And then, frankly, you know, as a trumpet player, that's where it comes from, right? You know, you breathe in. It's not even just your lungs, you know. When you take trumpet lessons and all that, it's the diaphragm that you fill up to then let the sound come out, you know?
Mm.
So it's always heart, right? To me, it's the feeling of my music is one of great peace, and for me, it's very transcendental. You know, it's one of the ways I'm able to leave this plane while I'm still in my body. You know.
Yeah. You know, it gives me this. It's an interesting combination because it's both trancey and transcendental. But and I think this might be part of the allure of the fact that you're using brass, you're using a brass instrument here, it still has a sense of adventure in it.
Well, you know, also in this genre of music, you know, and I kind of dislike, you know, I come from a marketing background, right? So things tend to get put or need to get put in a particular place, right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I show up as a trumpet player and they're expecting me to play, you know, Summertime or My Funny Valentine or something like that.
Right,
and
right.
I show up with like 5, you know, loop pedals and a guitar stop box modeler with, you know, 7 degrees of echo and chorus on it. And, you know, these trumpet players and sort of the jazzers of the world look at me like, you know, what is that? Mm. And so it's hard to characterize, you know, what it is. But for me, it's about vibration, right? And a brass instrument is everything about vibration. It's really not that much different than a didgeridoo, or or something where there's some sort of, or even a crystal bowl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or a gong. which is metal vibrating. It's just the thing that, you know, causes the metal to vibrate is my lips, you know, the vibration of your lips inside the mouthpiece is what sort of sets up the tone, you know.
Right. Yeah. That and your breath. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and for me, it's like, I really do feature or lean more towards the flugelhorn than the trumpet, mostly because of its warmth and sort of wide, round, warm tone, you know?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I'm grateful for that, because I've heard the flugelhorn played, and every time I hear it, it's very seductive. It's beautiful. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go out on a piece from Released, I think. It's called From the Dreamtime.
That's actually, it's from True. That
song. It's from True. Okay.
Yeah, and that features Samate playing the mbira, and which is like a kalimba type of instrument, a little bit of singing and then some playing. And then that actually, you know, the title came from, you know, the Aborigines, right? The dream time is that place between, you know, this earth and the dream world where the Aborigines, you know, like to sort of live.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But the dream time is sort of what they call it. And so that's, it led me there. The titles almost always come last, which is kind of funny. The music comes first, and then the titles come last.
Well, that's all right. That's like, yeah, you know, write the paper first, then the executive summary.
Right, right. Exactly.
So, okay, so before we head into Dreamtime, yeah, how can folks find you? What's the best way for us to get them in touch with you?
Well, my main website is www.jeffoster.com, which is J-E-F-F-O-S-T-E-R. Like the blender, right?
Okay.
JeffOster.com.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have all my songs for streaming and downloading there, and all the albums. And, you know, I'm on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook easily enough, and got a Twitter and all that good stuff. So always happy to be in touch and hear from you, you know, hear from
all
everybody.
Right. Do you have any adventures coming up soon that we might find you live somewhere?
Well, it's funny, yeah. On Saturday night, I'm going to be, you mentioned earlier that my three albums were the album of the year at the ZMR Awards.
Mm.
And
pretty impressive, by the way.
Thank you, my friend. And I'm proud of that, actually, you know. And,
yeah,
and this Saturday night, the ZMR Music Awards are actually, for the first time, going to be live in New Orleans.
Oh.
So there's going to be basically almost 5 hours of people like, you know, Carl Weingarten and Will Ackerman and me and Michael Manring, the bass player, fretless bass player that's played around for a long time. And all these great musicians are going to be there. And I'm actually presenting the album of the year to whoever wins it this year. And yeah, it's going to be really fun. So that's this coming Saturday night in New Orleans for all of you folks listening that are in the south part of the country there, you know.
That's very cool. And it's quite an honor to be on stage offering an award like that. That's cool.
Yeah, they let all the people that won last year give the award away to the ones that win this year. And this is the first time they've done it live, which is kind of cool. Mostly it's been a web-based type of event, but this year will be live, and super looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of good music, and I look forward to seeing who wins, you know.
All right. All right, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on the show, and thank you for the beautiful music that you create.
Well, thank you so much for having me here, and I hope to speak with you and your listeners again soon, my friend.
All right. This is From the Dreamtime by Jeff Oster. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. This program was brought to you by Firefly Willows LIVE. This is Deb Caracella. Please join us next time on Firefly Willows LIVE for Revolution with Heisey Luthmers, Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m.